Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
Hi, this is Matt, Sarah, Hannah, Madison, and Andrew. We're in the middle of the Pamlico Sound, in our car, on a car ferry from Hatteras Island to Ocracoke Island. This podcast was recorded at
12:26 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, March 15th of 2024.
Things may have changed by the time you hear it, but until then, we'll keep enjoying Spring Break 2024.
Yay! Wow!
It's adorable.
That sounds fun. I hope they brought enough snacks.
Hey there, it's the NPR Politics Podcast. I'm Asma Khalid. I cover the White House.
I'm Stephen Fowler. I cover the presidential election.
And I'm Domenico Montanaro, senior political editor and correspondent.
And this week, we got several updates on the various cases related to former President Donald Trump. I want to begin with what happened this morning. A Georgia judge decided on whether or not to remove Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis in the case related to the former President Donald Trump's attempt to interfere with the results of the 2020 presidential election in Georgia. You know, Stephen, folks may remember that fiery hours-long testimony Willis delivered that aired across cable news networks last month. I don't know that folks fully understand, though, the specifics of what was going on and why there was even an issue about her being removed from this case. So walk us through that.
Yeah. So Asma, there was this attempt by some of the defendants in the case to get Fani Willis in the Fulton County District Attorney's office disqualified from continuing the prosecution. The allegations were that Fani Willis had these financial incentives and benefits from seeking these charges against Donald Trump and others, that she hired her boyfriend, a man named Nathan Wade, to be a special prosecutor on the case. They both financially benefited from this case. There was a conflict of interest, and as such, the case should not continue with them at the helm. Now, all of this testimony did find that, yes, Willis and Wade were in a relationship. There was a dispute over when it started, less so over when it ended. Willis and Wade both said that they broke things off before charges were filed. And ultimately, what the judge found this morning is something that doesn't really satisfy any of the sides of this case. The judge did not find any evidence of a conflict of interest.
Okay.
The judge did not find that there was financial benefits gained. I mean, the district attorney makes well over $100,000 a year. The allegations that taxpayers paying her then boyfriend, that they then took trips together, was some sort of self-dealing, didn't really hold water. But the key thing is that there was this appearance of impropriety, and that as such, there were two options. One, Willis and the entire office could recuse themselves, and this could go to a different district attorney.
Okay.
Or two, Wade would remove himself from the case.
Okay, so Stephen, do we know what is actually going to happen? I mean, have we heard from Willis yet respond to what the judge decided?
We have not yet heard. I mean, the most likely option is that Nathan Wade will get the boot. You know, the simplest thing is to get rid of the distraction and move forward with the case. And we've already heard, you know, former President Donald Trump's lawyer weigh in and say this is not the end of our fight to get this case tossed out. So, I mean, the short answer, too, is that things are going to keep going. And there's enough in that judge's order to give ammunition for people to say, oh, look, you know, there's nothing wrong here. Things need to keep going. Donald Trump needs to be held accountable. But at the same time, there's enough ammunition to say it doesn't matter what the outcome is. You know, there's already evidence that things are tainted, innocent of all charges.
Got it. So do we have a sense of when the case might actually go to trial now? Or are you expecting things still to be held up for a while?
Oh, this is definitely just one minor speed bump in the longer obstacle course of getting this case to trial. Because there are so many defendants, and because there are so many different legal things that have to be resolved before we can go to trial, you know, I don't expect this to go to trial before the 2024 election in November. With this complicated a case, with this high a stakes, I wouldn't expect anything to happen very fast.
Domenico, what do you make of that? The fact that this case is unlikely, it sounds like, from what Stephen is saying, to actually go to trial before the November election. I know there's also been delays in some of the other trials that Trump is facing. What does that mean for the former president, for his campaign?
Well, it's a huge win for Trump politically, if that's the case. I mean, he's been really pushing him and his team to delay these cases as much as possible to get them kicked past the November 5th election. And if that is something that winds up happening in this case, it was considered one of the stronger cases against him, that will be a huge win for him. And it's affecting the other cases as well. I mean, you think about the New York hush money case, for example, there's a 30-day delay. It seems that's possible in that case because prosecutors are saying that they are open to that, considering that there's new information that...
And to be clear, Domingo, that's the trial that's related to the payment made to an adult film star, Stormy Daniels, back in 2016. Is that right?
Yeah. Stormy Daniels and a Playboy playmate by the name of Karen McDougal, okay. Which this is really about how Trump's organization wound up using funds to pay for this. And that's really what the case is about. It's seen as the least consequential or least serious of the charges, though not unserious. Mm-hmm. But the other cases, we know that, for example, the judge in that case has been trying to coordinate with Judge Tanya Chutkan, who's the judge in the case of the foundational January 6th mm-hmm. case, that's also seeing delays because that's been kicked to the Supreme Court for whether or not a president is essentially above the law and whether or not they have immunity. That's going to be heard by the Supreme Court in late April. So this can just keeps getting kicked down the campaign calendar, yeah, essentially. And a lot of these cases may never come to trial.
I mean, that big Supreme Court decision to me really seems like the fundamental question here legally, though, right? Domenico, it's the question of whether or not a former president has immunity. And you say they're going to hear that in April. So when would we hear a decision?
We don't know when there's going to be a decision. There's two different potential routes. If they go with the precedent of U.S. v. Nixon in the 1970s, they could release a decision, let's say, within 3 weeks. That still pushes things right to the brink of when we could have a verdict before the 2024 election. And if they go with regular order, essentially, of what they normally do, you wouldn't have a decision in this case, which is one of the bigger cases, until potentially June or late June. And that would almost certainly push a verdict beyond the November election.
And also to add, covering a lot of Trump's rallies and campaign events so far, you know, the further this goes down the road, the more he keeps mentioning them, and also the more the coverage of all of these different trials and all of these different cases become front of mind for voters, maybe in a different way than if some of this was wrapped up by late spring, early summer. It keeps things top of mind because that door is still open.
All right. Well, on that note, Stephen, I'm going to let you go, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Domenico, please stick around because we've got more to talk about. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Casey Morello, producer on the show, and I'm here with a quick plug for our most recent bonus episode. It's a look back at the 1976 race for the Republican presidential nomination.
President Ford today started scrambling for a new strategy to protect him from Ronald Reagan.
We had a pretty bitter contest, and it was head-to-head and knock-down, drag-out affair.
It was a fight that helped reshape the GOP into a conservative party. Available now for NPR Politics Podcast Plus listeners. If that's not you, it could be. You get bonus episodes, sponsor-free listening, and you help support our work. To sign up, just go to plus.npr.org today, and thanks.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere.
So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
And welcome back. We're joined now by Claudia Grisales, congressional correspondent for NPR. Claudia, it's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So you spent a part of this week in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, at the Greenbrier Resort. Is that right?
That is right.
You were there not to take a luxurious vacation, but to attend the GOP retreat.
Right.
So what was it like?
Yes, it is a very picturesque setting. You're surrounded by the Allegheny Mountains, these beautiful rivers. The hotel has this 1950s era bunker where they could hide members of Congress and the potential of some sort of disastrous attack. And so it's got a little bit of those 1950s feel throughout the resort. And in part, it's kind of why Speaker Mike Johnson chose it. It's this family-friendly resort. And a lot of members brought their spouses, and there were a lot of meetings held outside, for example, press conferences, what have you. It was a very dramatic departure from last year's GOP retreat in Orlando under former Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
But I heard a good number of members didn't show up this year.
Exactly. So attendance was not great. I talked to some of those members who did not go. Some told me they were facing very tough primaries. They couldn't afford the time. It was an election year. Some told me they had better things to do, like spending time with family. And then others, for example, Matt Gaetz of Florida, chose to use this time instead to campaign against an incumbent Republican in the conference. This is Tony Gonzalez, who's facing a tough runoff in Texas. So it was all a reminder of the dysfunction that continues to dominate this conference.
And then yesterday, Claudia, it seems like something that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said actually ignited a firestorm amongst a good number of Republicans. He took to the Senate floor with some comments about the Israel-Gaza conflict.
I have known Prime Minister Netanyahu for a very long time. I believe in his heart he has his highest priority is the security of Israel. However, I also believe Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way. As a lifelong supporter of Israel, it has become clear to me the Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th.
Right. This was a dramatic statement by Schumer, the highest ranking Jewish elected leader in the United States, to take this direct hit against Netanyahu. And symbolically, at least publicly, he's going it alone as far as Democrats go, really highlighting the level of crisis and concern that we've heard from other Democrats, but in off-the-record kind of situations where they're not speaking out about it publicly. I spoke to one member, and they raised concern that if the U.S. keeps throwing money at Israel, how much do they know if that money is not going to be used for Netanyahu's war room, and how would it be used? And so this moment definitely disrupted one of the sessions at the Republican retreat. Speaker Johnson said there was a buzz in the room as soon as folks were getting alerts about it. They called to make a press statement to slam Schumer's remark. And by they, I'm talking about Johnson and other Republican leaders.
What did they say?
They said that Schumer, his remarks were shocking, dangerous, and that he owed Israel an apology. This includes Johnson himself. Let's take a listen.
This is not only highly inappropriate, it's just plain wrong for an American leader to play such a divisive role in Israeli politics while our closest ally in the region is in an existential battle for its very survival. We need to be standing with Israel, and we need to give our friends and allies our full support.
This is just before the House Republicans were meeting to have lunch with the Israeli ambassador, Michael Herzog, at the retreat yesterday. And Republicans really took this opportunity to say now it's clear that only their party now stands with Israel.
Let me take my hands off my pearls and just, you know, express my shock and awe with some of these outrage here. Look, the fact is there's a lot of American and Israeli politics at play. You know, Joe Biden is having some real issues with the left flank of his party when it comes to his handling of the war in Gaza. You know, Biden has been very close to Netanyahu, you know, famously hugged him when he went over there. He's said he's known him for a long time. He's thought that he could exert his influence on Netanyahu and really hasn't been able to really change how Israel has conducted the war, which, you know, at this point, the White House really feels like they've gone too far. And Biden has said as much publicly. This is really, it feels like an attempt by a prominent Democrat like Schumer to be able to give some cover to Biden, to be able to clearly target Netanyahu, somebody who, by the way, is not very popular in Israel. So it's interesting for someone like Mike Johnson, the speaker, to say that they're the only party that stands with Israel when, you know, Netanyahu's approval ratings in Israel itself are not very good at all. So there's a really interesting dynamic that's happening here as the White House tries to sort of distance itself from Netanyahu and Israel's approach to try to win back some of those younger voters that Biden needs this fall.
I mean, I think it's hard for me to look at what's being said and not think that to some degree there are domestic politics at play here. Because as you mentioned, Domenico, certainly there is the left flank of the Democratic Party that has been rather disenchanted with how Biden has handled the conflict in Gaza. And, you know, White House officials are aware of that. The Biden campaign is aware of that. You saw yesterday the White House sent a group of senior officials to Chicago, which is important because it is the site of where the Democrats will officially nominate Joe Biden to be their nominee in the 2024 election. And the Chicagoland area has the largest Palestinian population in the country. And so, you know, they were meeting with officials there, but, you know, a lot of folks didn't want to meet with the White House. So I think they are trying to navigate these domestic politics. You know, at the same time, I was intrigued by what you said, Domenico, about Schumer's comments kind of giving Biden cover, because Biden himself was asked this morning for a reaction to Schumer's speech. And he said, quote, "I'm not going to elaborate on his speech. He made a good speech, and I think he expressed serious concern shared not only by him, but by many Americans."
Yeah, it almost feels like Biden is telling Schumer, go ahead and make a speech like that, because that would be helpful. And Schumer, people have to realize, is somebody who kind of rose to power within Senate leadership because he was sort of the message whisperer to Harry Reid when Harry Reid, late senator from Nevada, who was the longtime Democratic leader in the Senate, would really rely on Schumer for his guidance and advice. They even at one point had a joint messaging office. So Schumer doesn't do these things unintentionally. Mm-hmm. He is very clear about what he is saying, what he wants to do. This is also somebody who used to run the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, which helps elect Senate Democrats. So it's very calculated as far as what Schumer's trying to do. On the Republican side also, a lot of what they're saying is really targeted toward white evangelicals who have a special interest in Israel, not so much at American Jews. They hope that it will have some effect in pulling some over, but Democrats have traditionally won about two-thirds of the American Jewish vote.
All right. Well, we are going to continue monitoring both the situation here domestically as well as the possible negotiations for a ceasefire abroad. We'll keep an eye on all of that. But first, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, it's time for Can't Let It Go.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the United States Postal Service. Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping services? Then give your business a competitive edge with USPS Ground Advantage. Keep things simple with upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. Turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable. This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing. Visit your local REI co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways to opt outside.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Amgen, a biotechnology pioneer leading the fight against the world's toughest diseases such as cancer, heart disease, asthma, and osteoporosis. In a new era of human health, Amgen continues to accelerate the pace of change, operating sustainably and drawing upon deep knowledge of science to push beyond what's known today.
With each decade, they reliably deliver powerful new therapies to patients. Learn more at Amgen.com.
And we're back. And it's time now for my favorite part of the show and yours called Can't Let It Go. That's the part of the show where we talk about the things that we just cannot stop thinking about, politics or otherwise. And Claudia, why don't you kick it off for us today?
I will kick it off with two words. Kate Gate.
Ah, me too.
Or Princess Kate, Kate Middleton. I can't let it go.
I
need more and I can't stop.
It was what I was thinking about also, although I can let it go.
I can't stop looking away.
The thing is, like, I looked through all the images. I looked at the photoshops. The thing that I can't let go of is the crown and how it's informed my ideas of how the firm, quote unquote, Buckingham Palace is just this huge PR machine that's also lying to people about stuff all the time.
It also makes me feel like I need a new season of The Crown.
They really cut that show off too early. This is ridiculous. Now we need two more seasons.
Okay, so let me pause here because for listeners who might not be following Kate Gate as closely as us, though I do question that if you don't know these things, I will give you a basic lay of the land. So Kate Middleton, wife to the heir to the throne, Prince William, has not been seen, I believe, in public since December. In January, Kensington Palace informed us that Kate entered the hospital for abdominal surgery, and the palace said she would not return to her public duties until after Easter. Then there was this very strange photo that appeared this past week. It appeared to be a picture of Kate celebrating Mother's Day in the UK, which, by the way, does not take place at the same time that Mother's Day occurs here in the United States. Anyhow, a bunch of news organizations killed the photo after saying that they found evidence of it being photoshopped and manipulated. So there's a lot in there. And I am just left wondering, where is she and what is going on?
Yes, exactly. And then people have analyzed the metadata on that Mother's Day photo, and they have revealed from their investigative study and analysis, the zipper on Kate is off. There's something going on with Princess Charlotte's sleeve, maybe her hand. I've studied it a few times as well, maybe as you have, Domenico, too. But it's just stunning in terms of where is Kate. There was another photo taken of Kate with William in a vehicle. And more recently, Kate has turned away from a camera. And now we have photographers defending pictures saying, no, it's real. She is in that car. It has not been manipulated. And so now every photo will come under this scrutiny because we don't know what to believe.
And I have to say, all this attention is ridiculous. I mean, and everything that they do all the time, everything that they do all the time and the attention that they receive is ridiculous. I'm very firmly in sort of the Irish camp when it comes to the UK and the
monarchy.
I don't think I can repeat how they talk about it, but you can look up how Irish Times is described talking about them. They said, which is like kind of, you know, having clowns for neighbors. I feel like this isn't as much my fight, but as an American, we fought a war to get away from a monarchy.
Yeah.
So the only reason I even care or think about it is to make fun of it.
My problem is they just need to come clean on everything.
That's what I'm like, right? Like if they had just said, this is what she's doing, I feel like you can't be in the public limelight. UK taxpayer dollars. I know, I'm not a British citizen, but I feel for them. They are taking taxpayer dollars and then not have some degree of accountability.
I know. It's like all these weird signs. What else might be going on? And then recently, Prince William didn't take part in his godfather's memorial service.
I mean, it's beginning to look like Harry and Meghan maybe made the right choice to disconnect, move to LA.
I just wish Harry could get back in there, get the information, write another book, and sell it.
Get the information.
A service for the public.
Exactly.
Claudia wants all the tea.
Yeah.
Oh, very good way to end today's show. All right, well, that is a wrap for today's podcast. Our executive producer is Muthoni Muturi. Our editor is Erica Morrison. And I want to just pause here for a moment because today is Erica's last day. We have so appreciated your wisdom.
Thank you. Your
edits to our scripts. So thank you. Our producers are Jung-Yoon Han, Casey Morell, and Kelly Wessinger. Special thanks to Christian Dove Calamer and Dana Farrington. I'm Asma Khalid. I cover the White House.
I'm Claudia De Salis. I cover Congress.
And I'm Domenico Montanaro, senior political editor and correspondent.
And thank you all, as always, for listening to the NPR Politics Podcast.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Planet Oat. No deep thinking here. Planet Oat oat milk is rich, creamy, and an excellent source of calcium with vitamins A and D. Also, Planet Oat's unsweetened varieties have 0 grams of sugar. Visit planetoat.com for more.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.